Welcome to the Best of the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff, president of the Christian Research Institute. We're on the air because life and truth matter. The passion and purpose of the Christian Research Institute is to contend earnestly for the faith once for all delivered to the saints by focusing on apologetics, biblical literacy, and countering the cults. To connect with CRI, call 888-7000-CRI. Or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org. And now here's the host of the Bible Answer Man broadcast, Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you very much, Randy. And if you do have questions, those questions need to be focused on the subject of Islam, in that I'm going to be interviewing today Raymond Ibrahim on his book, Crucified Again, Exposing Islam's New War on Christians. The number to dial, 888-ASK-HANK. As mentioned, numerically, 888-275-4265, the book Crucified Again, available for those who support the ministry of the Christian Research Institute. You can get your copy on the web at equip.org, or you can write me at Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. And as always, our resource consultants are standing by, 888-7000. And the letters CRI. Good to have you back on the broadcast, Raymond.
Hi, Hank. Good to be with you again.
I want to set something up for you and then have you give a perspective that I think all of us need to have. During the 33rd anniversary of the overthrow of the Shah, I personally experienced a portrait of peace and tolerance vis-a-vis Islam. I waited in line to board a United Emirates flight from Dubai to Tehran. And while I was in line, I had a conversation with a man and his father. The father happened to be 100 years old. It was a very, very pleasant conversation, both Iranians. Then on the plane, I sat next to a very accomplished Persian woman with two master's degrees, and she offered me assistance if I needed it while I was in Tehran. When I deplaned, I was kissed by two Muslim men, and I heard the word salam. The following morning, I met a translator named Fatima, and she was absolutely delightful. She was amused when I told her that I had not ventured out of the hotel, and she told me I could walk the streets of Tehran in the middle of the night with complete confidence. Turns out she was right. And when I spoke at the universities of Tehran and Alma-Tabetaba, the sociology university in Tehran, students and faculty were more than polite and engaging. And that all seems, Raymond, to fit in to a narrative that we hear in the West, that Islam is a religion of peace. Now, obviously, my experience tells me that there are perhaps millions and millions of very peaceful Muslims, but is Islam really a religion of peace and tolerance?
Yes, what you bring up is very important, and it's useful for us to make a distinction. And the short answer, the quick answer, which I will then elaborate, is that even listening to you, what you basically delineated is what almost everyone does. They tell me of Muslims, and then they say that that is a reflection of Islam. And I think that's the fallacy. Islam is an objective ideology, and Muslims are regular humans like the rest of us who can, to varying degrees, subscribe to or even not subscribe to this ideology. Now, to elaborate, I often use an analogy that I came up with a few years ago. And the analogy, which I find very helpful and some others do, is as follows. I think today all of us would condemn and denounce the ideology of Nazism. We call it supremacist. It's inherently supremacist and violent towards those deemed inferior, and so forth. And that's there's no controversy about this. Everyone will agree to that. At the same time, we know historically that there were many Germans, including officials in the Nazi Party, who were actually good people and went to great lengths to help Jews and others, and often to their own danger and putting their own life on the line. And for example, as popularized by the movie Schindler's List, Oskar Schindler was an actual ranking Nazi member. yet at no little risk to himself, he put his neck on the line. He helped a lot of Jews and others escape. So what do we make of this? What do we make of this basic contradiction? And obviously, if you ask someone, well, what about Oskar Schindler and these people and these other Germans and so forth, were they moderate Nazis? I think the answer is no. What they were is they were Nazis in name, and maybe they adhered to certain tenets of Nazism. But when it came to the really nasty stuff, they just said no to it and didn't subscribe to it and did the opposite of it. So that doesn't mean that Nazism is now exonerated or that there's a radical Nazism versus a moderate Nazism. It just means that in all ideologies and religions, you're going to have people who to varying degrees will subscribe to varying tenets of said religion. And I think that's the most useful way to understand those many Muslims that you alluded to. And I, in fact, agree with you. There are many people who identify as Muslims, or we think of them as Muslims, and they're very good people. They don't subscribe to the sorts of things that we discussed in the last show and so forth. But in no way, shape, or form in my mind does that suggest that there is a valid, moderate form of Islam. That simply tells me, just like Oskar Schindler and so forth in that analogy, these people are just not buying into and working in that the supremacist aspect of Islam for whatever reason. And that's why they are the good people that they are. But Islam is still Islam.
Talking to Raymond Ibrahim, his book Crucified Again, Exposing Islam's New War on Christians, available for those who support the ministry all this month. Check it out on the web at equip.org. Raymond, I want to ask you another question that I think is very pertinent to your book. In fact, I thought it was one of the most insightful aspects of your book. You have a section called The Christian Golden Age, and you talk about a golden age of Christians living within the Muslim world, and that has very much influenced the way many people think of Islam today.
Absolutely. I'm glad you bring that up, Hank, because like you, I think that is key, and I'm glad to see that you saw that, because other people sort of don't really get it, and it's very key to explaining why we see things the way we do and why things have developed the way they have. And so going off what we discussed last time, which was more historical, and we discussed the Islamic conquest and basically centuries of depredations and or what's known as dhimmitude against Christians and other non-Muslims, right around, and of course, that continued by jihad into Europe proper. And so for centuries, both the Arabs and then later the Turks and the Ottomans and so forth were constantly trying to also get into Europe and do the same thing that they had done in North Africa and the Middle East and so forth. And they made very much very good headway. For example, the Ottoman Empire was into Constantinople and was eventually only stopped at the gates of Vienna in 1683, which is not that long ago. Now, something happens right around the 1700s and 1800s, and that's basically the meteoric rise of the West, and for our purposes, militarily, is what we're looking at. And essentially, the West easily vanquished the Islamic world, and it went on the retreat up until, you know, until recently with terrorism, Islamic State, and so forth. Now, what happened is, if you look at the psychology of Islam and Muslims from the beginning, they always respected might. Might makes right. When Muhammad, the preacher, was just a preacher who had no power, no political authority or influence, he literally had a handful of followers after years of preaching. It was only after he went on the war path and started conquering and plundering and enslaving people and thus enriching his followers that people started to join his caravan. And that's well known and it's well documented in history. So I think Islam has always justified and seen itself, and Muslims have seen the power and glory of Islam in that it was a conquering and superior religion on the military field, at least. So when the West completely dominated Islam, I think lots of Muslims in the 1800s and in the early 1900s up until the mid-1900s actually were very much Muslim in name only. And so if you go to the Middle East from 50 to 100 years ago, this Islamic jihad stuff was virtually non-existent because Muslims were actually looking towards the West and they understood that the winning way is no longer the Islamic way. It's the way to become Western. And that's why you see so many of the Islamic leaders or the leaders of Arab nations were all secular people as recent as Saddam Hussein and Muammar Gaddafi, Hosni Mubarak, Nasser of Egypt in the 60s and so forth, because these people and the dominant culture of the Muslim world was westward leaning. Islam was seen as backwards. They would often mock it. I see videos of top leaders of Muslim nations mocking the headscarf or the hijab, and Muslims laughing about it as if because it's ridiculous for anyone to wear it now. And this is about 50, 60, 80 years ago, where now it's all come back. So I think that, and of course, in that context, Christians living in these nations had it very good compared to before, because, again, Islam was a retreating force. For example, in Egypt, the Copt or the Christian is no different than the Muslim. In fact, he's almost looked up to because he sort of has that Western connection and that he is a Christian, and the West is identified with Christianity and the West is superior and so forth. So that's what led to the Golden Age. And then something happens, in my opinion, right around the 60s and the 50s, or basically the so-called, you know, sexual revolution, the hippie revolution, and the epistemological shift that even academia took in the West, which became very anti-Christian, very hostile to Christianity, very, looking to all of the former enemies of Christendom and then portraying them as the victims of Christianity. And so you see all of a sudden Islam is beloved. It's the noble victim of Christians and so forth, and the sexual revolution. But what happened is the Muslims, that actually pushed them all back onto their religion. Not just the fact that here in the West, Islam is praised and its history is whitewashed and glorified in ways that just never happened historically, but because of things like homosexuality, sexual licentiousness, immorality, and so forth, to Muslims, that was no longer something they want to copy, as opposed to the earlier Western manifestation, which was still very much grounded in Christian mores. And I think that very much started pushing them back. Where are they going to go? If they're not going to emulate the West because they're losing respect for it, then they go back onto their own heritage of Islam, which, of course, has very strong cultural mores and so forth. And I think, in as much as they began Islamizing more and more, so are you seeing what's happening to Christians, because Christians are again now going back to their original lots when they were conquered centuries ago and being treated as third-class citizens to be abused and used any which way and so forth.
And in some sense, there are only three options for Christians living in Muslim lands today, and that is say the Shahada, suffer subjugation, or perhaps the sword.
Well, that's the original three options that were formulated by Muhammad. And if you look at the historical writings of the earliest Muslim writers writing in Arabic, that was always the option that the invading Muslims gave to the people whose land they invaded, including the Byzantine Empire in the 7th century, Syria and Egypt, the Iraq and Iran, which was under the Zoroastrian Empire. And they always were given three choices. You can either become one of us, or you pay tribute or jizya and live as third-class citizens by following our rules, which, of course, are supremacist in nature. So Christians can't build churches, they can't renovate churches, they can't, you know, show any signs of their Christianity, including crosses publicly and so forth. Or if you don't like that, then it's the sword. And that is, there's 1,400 years of well-documented history that is precisely what Muslims did to non-Muslims, Christians chief among them.
Talking to Raymond Ibrahim, the book is absolutely fascinating. It is a must-read. It's titled Crucified Again, Exposing Islam's New War on Christians. It has absolutely stunning endorsements, including David Horowitz, who said the most aggressive force in the world today is the Islamic movement to subdue and then to outlaw rival creeds, including those that are secular. Most people assume the primary targets of Islamic supremacists are Jews. But Raymond Ibrahim's indispensable book shows that they are Christians and Democrats as well. In other words, we are facing a clash of civilizations. We are in the midst of an epic moment in human history. We might well say that the sea in Christian has been aptly dubbed the new scarlet letter. And so the title of this book, as we talked about in a previous broadcast, is not hyperbole. It's not sensationalism. It's not selling. It's not sophistry. It's absolutely serious and correct. And right now, Christians are dying in mass at the hands of Muslims. They're being subjugated. They're facing the sword. Or some are just capitulating and saying, this is too tough. I'll pay, well, the protection racket fee. Crucified Again by Raymond Ibrahim, an absolute stunning work, available for those who support the ministry. Once again, you can get your copy in a safe, secure fashion for your support at equip.org. We'll be right back with more of the Bible Answer Man broadcast, so please don't touch that dial.
Raymond Ibrahim, author of Crucified Again, Exposing Islam's New War on Christians, writes, "Christian persecution is perhaps the most obvious example of a phenomenon the mainstream media wants to ignore out of existence, Islamic supremacy. Vastly outnumbered and politically marginalized, Christians in the Islamic world simply wish to worship in peace, and yet they are still hounded and attacked. Their churches are burned and destroyed. Their children are kidnapped, raped, and enslaved. It's time to wake up. Read Crucified Again by Raymond Ibrahim. To receive your copy as our thanks for your gift, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI. Or go online at equip.org. Stay with us. Hank will be back right after this. Take the Bible Answer Man broadcast wherever you go, on your phone or handheld device, with the Equip app, free from the Christian Research Institute. The Equip app is available for both Apple and Android devices, so you can listen to the Bible Answer Man broadcast live each day, or listen to archived programs at your convenience. You can also subscribe to the Christian Research Journal, make a donation to CRI, and read well-researched, trustworthy articles that will help you defend the faith and grow in your walk with Christ. With the Equip app from the Christian Research Institute, you'll have the answers you need to questions about Christianity, cults, and issues of theological and apologetic concern right at your fingertips wherever you go. So go to equip.org/app and download the Equip app for your phone or tablet today. Again, that's equip.org/app. Christians in the Islamic world are vastly outnumbered and politically subjugated under the Islamic way. In Crucified Again, Exposing Islam's New War on Christians, Raymond Ibrahim poignantly states one urgent reason why the West in its entirety, Christians and non-Christians, liberals and conservatives, deists and atheists, should take note of and respond to Muslim persecution of Christians. It is a reflection of what Islam has in store for them. Ibrahim explains that if the mainstream media were to report honestly on the persecution of Christians under Islam, the obvious implications that Islam is dangerously hostile to all non-Muslims would be inescapable. Read Crucified Again, Exposing Islam's New War on Christians. To receive your copy as our thanks, call 888-7000-CRI or go online at equip.org. Are you the product of millions of years of unguided, purposeless, natural processes? Or are you created in the image of a loving God? Faced with the overwhelming scorn of evolutionary proselytizers, it can be hard to articulate the truth about God's creative work. And even among faithful Christians, many misconceptions linger. The Creation Answer Book by Hank Hanegraaff puts answers to the most hotly debated origins questions right at your fingertips, giving you clarity and understanding. Learn to articulate the truth about our origins clearly and compassionately when you request your copy of the Creation Answer Book, or listen to Hank's insightful answers with the unabridged audiobook version on CD. Receive your copy of the Creation Answer Book or the audiobook on CD from the Christian Research Institute when you call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. Christians and Muslims can be co-citizens in ethnicity, national identity, culture, and language. But wherever and whenever Muslims are in power, explains Raymond Ibrahim, churches are outlawed, burned, and bombed, while Bibles and crucifixes are confiscated and destroyed. Freedom of speech, to speak positively of Christianity or critically of Islam, is denied, often on pain of death. Read Raymond Ibrahim's book, Crucified Again, Exposing Islam's New War on Christians. Receive your copy as our thanks when you call 888-7000-CRI and make a donation to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or go online at equip.org. And now, let's rejoin your host, Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you much, Randy. We'll be right back to my interview with Raymond Ibrahim in just a moment. I want to mention again that the book, Crucified Again, is available for those who support the ministry prayerfully and financially. Check it out on the web at equip.org. Also, when you become a CRI support team member, you commit to supporting the Christian Research Institute and its many outreach ministries around the world with your ongoing support and appreciation. You'll receive a personalized copy of any one of my books, personalized to you, a family member, or a friend. It's as easy as going to equip.org/donate. Also, when you're at equip.org, check out CRI's Equip app. Just go to equip.org/app. You can listen to the Bible Answer Man broadcast on your smartphone live. You can listen to archived broadcasts. You can read articles in the Christian Research Journal. You can give in a safe, secure fashion, and much more. Again, check out our app. Go to equip.org/app. Continuing my interview with Raymond Ibrahim, the book Crucified Again. You know, you said something in the first segment that really caught my attention. You mentioned 1683. I mean, this is one of those epic moments in human history. You have a Polish king, Jan Sobieski, who stops the Ottoman Turks at the gates of Vienna. If that had not happened, I guess I want to ask you the question, where would we be today? And the reason I'm asking that question is we are in an epic moment of history right now, and therefore the sleeping church has to be awakened.
If in 1683 the Polish king and his alliance did not stop the Turks, there's a good chance, we would certainly not be where we are right now, because the entire course of Western history would be changed. At least a large part, if not by now, all of Europe would be Islamic. And I know that's very hard for people to imagine, but again, you have to reflect on the fact that where the Islamic world now exists is almost entirely former Christian territory. And in all of North Africa, we tend to think of it and the Middle East as the Arab Muslim world. Well, in the 7th century, that area was more Christian than Europe and was actually the intellectual center of the Christian church in places like Alexandria and Antioch and Constantinople and Jerusalem, the four original sees minus Rome, the only one really in Europe proper. And now all four are the Islamic world and overrun by Muslims. So it's very well that's what could have happened. But and the greater point is, you know, 1683 is really the last large push. But you go 1,000 years earlier in 732, and it was again the Muslims who were pushing, this time through France, and were finally stopped at the Battle of Tours or Poitiers by Charles Martel. And it's the same story over, and the Europeans and the Christians, the Franks at that time, were given the same three choices: convert or be our tributaries or fight to the death. And of course, they chose the latter, and they prevailed. So it boggles my mind how this is such an old and ancient history with so much continuity. The Islamic State is a perfect continuation of early, not early, 1400 years almost of Islamic history, and yet they've been pulled out completely out of context. So many Americans are just a group of terrorists and criminals with no real ideology who are trying to exploit Islam. when in fact they are absolute representations of what Islam has been doing to non-Muslims, including the burning people alive, the sexual subjugation and enslavement, the burning of churches, and so forth, for literally almost 1,400 years.
What's hard for me to understand, Raymond, particularly in light of the chaos that's going on in the cradle of Christianity and other places around the world, it's really hard for me to imagine that people can, in this age of enlightenment, make an apologetic for Islam as a religion of peace. And yet we hear that narrative over and over again. And it's not just the far left. I mean, I hear this narrative on very conservative talk shows as well.
Right. And, you know, I hear it too. And I've made a conclusion because I always try to simplify things. And anyone who at this late date still says that Islam is a religion of peace, you can rest assured he is one of two things, either a fool or a liar, or a little bit of both, because there's no justification, no rational excuse for anyone right now, especially the people we're talking about are usually those who are supposed to be well-informed. They're politicians, they're journalists, they're academics. And so they should even know more than the layman on the streets who actually seems to understand what Islam is about. So that's what they're doing. Now, the question, if they're really that stupid, I actually understand it, because what they are is, I'm sorry to say, and I'm someone who's educated, but the education system in America, especially when it comes to history and philosophy and religion and social science, is so heavily indoctrinated with what we alluded to earlier, a sort of anti-Christian, anti-Western bias, coupled with a very positive view of Islam and anything that is non-Western, that it is completely indoctrinated. So many people, and the more educated, it seems, the more indoctrinated they become, because they've been hearing this over and over from professors and teachers and reading books and so forth, that they just can't simply accept facts as they are. But then there's the liars, and I know there's those people who do understand what's going on and who do know what Islam is about, but for whatever agenda they have, they make it out to be a religion of peace and so forth. And, you know, you may think they are more dangerous, but in fact, it's the same net result, whether it's from a fool or a liar. The net result is Americans are being paralyzed before an imminent threat.
You're listening to a conversation with Raymond Ibrahim. His book, Crucified Again, Exposing Islam's New War on Christians, available for those who support the ministry all this month. Check it out on the web at equip.org or write me at Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. And do remember, a resource consultant standing by, 888-7000 and the letters CRI. Another personal anecdote, but with a purpose. I want you to talk a little bit about Saudi Arabia. I have a friend, his name is Abdul Karim, and he is a professor of clinical medicine and pediatrics at the Al Faisal University in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. And just a year ago, I was wandering the streets of Harvard Square with him during the Arab weekend. And I was thinking about the fact that while we were able to walk Harvard Square together, we could never walk the Kaaba Square together. And that leads me to the question, what's going on with Saudi Arabia? We have an ally in Saudi Arabia that is perhaps as draconian as any country in the world when it comes to the persecution of Christians. We don't hear about it as much, and you allude to this in your book, because they've already dealt with the problem. There's not a lot of Christian presence there, at least not active Christian presence.
Right, and that's exactly the question. You know, on the one time, we are supposedly, at least those who speak up in the media, the politicians, so forth, horrified at the atrocities that the Islamic State is committing, and yet these are the same atrocities that the state of Saudi Arabia, I don't mean some radicals on the side or some you know, extreme wing. The actual government of Saudi Arabia is formally on record proclaiming its hatred for everything non-Islamic. And they actually have a fatwa endorsed by the highest commission of the Saudi government, a fatwa being a religious decree, which actually says that all Muslims, it's incumbent on them to hate, to have hatred for all Jews, all Christians, and all non-Muslims. And this is, again, keep in mind, this is not this isn't a radical cleric who's just speaking for himself. This is actually the state itself is endorsing this. It was produced by an actual a department of the government of Saudi Arabia, and yet they come and our leaders go and bow before them or kiss them and hug them, and we're all supposed to be great friends and allies. And when you think about that, you start to understand all, you know, going back to the liars or fools, you start to understand why there's a lot of liars, especially at the top levels, because of this Saudi component. Saudi Arabia is just another ISIS. In fact, it is fundamentally responsible for ideologically creating ISIS. Saudi Arabia spends over $100 billion a year spreading what they call Wahhabi literature, which is really fundamentalist literal writings of Islam, including the Hadith or the stories of Muhammad and so forth. And these have played a fundamental role in creating groups like ISIS.
Talk about the irony of using the phrase radical Islam when we talk about global Islamic jihadists. Are they really radical, or are they being consistent with the life and legacy, the example of their leader, Muhammad?
Yeah, I very much, you know, find it intellectually dishonest using these adjectives, radical Islam. I understand why people use it in the West, because, of course, if you just drop the adjective and there's no qualifier and you just say Islam, it becomes, you know, the situation becomes apparent for what it is, and people are trying to minimize it. So they put this word radical and try to imply that, you know, well, there's also the good Islam, even though, as we discussed earlier, with my Nazi analogy, you know, Islam is Islam. It teaches, it's actually a very black and white religion. What it teaches is very standard. It has no Sunni Islam, which is what more than 90% of the Muslim world's Muslims subscribe to, including ISIS and Saudi Arabia and Boko Haram and Al-Qaeda. Sunni Islam is black and white. Its laws are very ascertainable. All Muslims know them. There's no, you know, spiritual, abstract, metaphysical side that's open to interpretation. And so things like killing a Muslim who says, I don't want to be a Muslim anymore, I want to be a Christian, that is an apostate. That is black and white standard teaching of Sunni Islam. A lot of these Islamic states, no pun intended, because we have the Islamic State, but Saudi Arabia and other nations actually also support this law. And, you know, so when a Muslim goes, as they often do, and kills his wife because she converted to Christianity, or Muslim parents attack and try to kill their son or daughter because they converted to Christianity, how is that radical? It's only radical from our vantage point because we deem such behavior radical, but it's still squarely consistent with mainstream Islamic teaching.
Dr. Rabin Emery, again, the book, it's absolutely must reading. It's titled Crucified Again, Exposing Islam's New War on Christians. It is endorsed by some of the greatest apologists on the planet. Get your copy at equip.org, or when you write me at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. And do remember our resource consultants, they are standing by, 888-7000 and the letter CRI. If you have not as yet subscribed to the Christian Research Journal, it is our award-winning magazine that no Christian home should be without. It is available in a brand new edition as I speak. Again, you can check it out on the web at equip.org. When we come back from the break, I will try to take some questions for Raymond Ibrahim directly from our callers calling in from all over the world. So stay tuned for that as well. The number to dial, 888-ASK-HANK, numerically 888-275-4265.
Christians in the Islamic world are vastly outnumbered and politically marginalized. They are subjugated under the Islamic way. Crucified Again, Exposing Islam's New War on Christians by Raymond Ibrahim poignantly states one urgent reason why the West, in its entirety, Christians and non-Christians, liberals and conservatives, deists and atheists, should take note of and respond to Muslim persecution of Christians. It is a reflection of what Islam has in store for them. Read Crucified Again, Exposing Islam's New War on Christians. To receive your copy as our thanks, call 888-7000-CRI and make a donation to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI. 7000CRI, or go online at equip.org. Hank Hanegraaff will be back right after this. Are you the product of millions of years of unguided, purposeless, natural processes? Or are you created in the image of a loving God? Faced with the overwhelming scorn of evolutionary proselytizers, it can be hard to articulate the truth about God's creative work. And even among faithful Christians, many misconceptions linger. The Creation Answer Book by Hank Hanegraaff puts answers to the most hotly debated origins questions right at your fingertips, giving you clarity and understanding. Learn to articulate the truth about our origins clearly and compassionately when you request your copy of the Creation Answer Book, or listen to Hank's insightful answers with the unabridged audiobook version on CD. Receive your copy of the Creation Answer Book or the audiobook on CD from the Christian Research Institute when you call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. Christians in the Islamic world are vastly outnumbered and politically subjugated under the Islamic way. In Crucified Again, Exposing Islam's New War on Christians, Raymond Ibrahim poignantly states one urgent reason why the West in its entirety, Christians and non-Christians, liberals and conservatives, deists and atheists, should take note of and respond to Muslim persecution of Christians. It is a reflection of what Islam has in store for them. Ibrahim explains that if the mainstream media were to report honestly on the persecution of Christians under Islam, the obvious implications that Islam is dangerously hostile to all non-Muslims would be inescapable. Read Crucified Again, Exposing Islam's New War on Christians. To receive your copy as our thanks, call 888-7000-CRI or go online at equip.org. Take the Bible Answer Man broadcast wherever you go on your phone or handheld device with the Equip app, free from the Christian Research Institute. The Equip app is available for both Apple and Android devices, so you can listen to the Bible Answer Man broadcast live each day or listen to archived programs at your convenience. You can also subscribe to the Christian Research Journal, make a donation to CRI, and read well-researched, trustworthy articles that will help you defend the faith and grow in your walk with Christ. With the Equip app from the Christian Research Institute, you'll have the answers you need to questions about Christianity, cults, and issues of theological and apologetic concern right at your fingertips wherever you go. So go to equip.org/app and download the Equip app for your phone or tablet today. Again, that's equip.org/app. Raymond Ibrahim, author of Crucified Again, Exposing Islam's New War on Christians, writes, "Christian persecution is perhaps the most obvious example of a phenomenon the mainstream media wants to ignore out of existence, Islamic supremacy. Vastly outnumbered and politically marginalized, Christians in the Islamic world simply wish to worship in peace, and yet they are still hounded and attacked. Their churches are burned and destroyed, their children are kidnapped, raped, and enslaved. It's time to wake up." Read Crucified Again by Raymond Ibrahim. To receive your copy as our thanks for your gift, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI. Or go online at equip.org. Now, here's CRI President Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you very much, Randy. Continuing with my interview, Raymond Ibrahim, he is the author, as just mentioned, Crucified Again, Exposing Islam's New War on Christians. I want to get to the question, I think, that is of surpassing importance. I mean, you look at the fact that we are facing in the West migration without assimilation. It's been called the python swallowing its prey with a long and slow digestion. We see the kind of hard persecution faced in the Middle East, moving west, which begs the question, how serious, how grave is the circumstance that the West is today facing vis-a-vis Islam?
I think the gravest point of the situation right now is essentially this sort of, whether it's ignorance or indifference or empowerment of Islam that's occurring in the West. Because as things stand right now, if it's an all-out military confrontation, the Islamic world still would not be able to stand against. It's not just the West that would have to fight, but really the entire world, which would include China and so forth, even though, because they're all infidels, even though that, you know, they would use each other to fight against the West and so forth. But so I don't think we're at that point, but the greater danger is how, you know, it's incrementally the Islamic movement is getting stronger. Every year it keeps getting stronger and stronger and spreading wider and wider. And it seems more apathy, more indifference, and more lies keep emanating from U.S. and other Western power leadership. And so I think that's really the grave danger, because if that continues, then yes, you can expect to see the sorts of things that are from history, which include, you know, unequivocal conquests of Western nations. It could very easily happen, because they're being, and the other key thing that, you know, one has to keep in mind that's related to what we're talking about is that, going back to the historical things, so Muslims were doing what some Muslims are doing now, which is trying to invade Europe. They've been doing that for centuries. There's actual records. Muhammad himself would tempt his followers to help him go and fight the Byzantines or in Constantinople, and he would entice them by telling them they have very fair blonde women. And this is actually recorded in Islamic texts. And that was one of the main reasons that the caliphate would always attack Europe, was to get white slave girls. You know, this is politically incorrect, I understand, but it's very well written and documented in Muslim sources. So this has happened historically. Now we look to Europe and you see these nonstop, sexual harassment, gang rapes, and so forth going on in Europe. A place like Sweden, since it's become multicultural and allowed Muslims in, the rate of rape there has something gone like 1300% has gone up, and it's almost always in the context of Muslim migrants and so forth. So the thing to keep in mind is, while Muslims were doing this historically because they could, because they were able to invade and able to fight and able to win and able to conquer, what they're doing now is 100% a result of Western policies. Muslims are not able to invade America or invade Europe if it wasn't for the fact that Europe and America are actually the ones going out of the way to let them in and allow them to do what they're doing. So I think it's important to keep in mind that the West is still in a good position vis-a-vis Islam, and that almost everything that Islam is doing on Western ground is being allowed and enabled and empowered by Western elements, whether the government or the media or the apologists and academia and so forth. And so it's just a matter of right thinking and right policies, and really Islam will essentially crawl back once it came.
What about the demographic problem? I mean, particularly you are mentioning some of the EU nations where there's a negative birth rate. You have the migration of Islam to those areas. They have a very robust birth rate. And Muammar Gaddafi, when he was alive, was talking about the fact that we don't have to take over Europe through terrorism. We'll take it over simply as a result of the demographics.
Well, sure. And all that, you know, it's this sort of symbiotic interplay between Islam itself and all these essentially anti-Christian forces that have been plaguing Europe and America to a little less degree for the last several decades. When you see this, you know, in other words, what I'm saying is, if Europe and America still had some commonsensical grounding and biblical understanding and Christian values that they weren't, you know, ashamed of and have to push down and have to so hard always try to only point out Christian values that actually jibe with liberal values such as tolerance and so forth, if they had all this, we would be back to that point where I was talking of the golden era, when, if anything, Muslims were trying to be more like Westerners, because they see Westerners as still moral. They see Westerners as unapologetic about their way of life and their creed, and essentially not going to be spineless in front of Islam as they've become now, and groveling before it and always trying to praise it. So it's this sort of symbiotic thing between Islam on the one hand, and the greater problem is in Western culture itself. And that's why I'm saying Islam is intrinsically not a threat at this point in time. It's only being a threat because of Western elements that are allowing it and empowering it. Again, you have to keep in mind the Islamic State exists and is entrenched in precisely all those areas that the United States went into to bring freedom and democracy to. In Iraq, in Yemen a little bit, big time in Libya, and ongoing in Syria, where we're trying to get rid of the big bad Bashar Assad. Again, we're using the same arguments we used for Saddam Hussein and all that. And you come to find out these secular leaders who are actually part of that old golden age, they're very westernized. In their mind, Islam isn't what's superior. It's acting like a Western or having Western values and being secular. And these are the ones that actually have always contained the Islamic threat. So the United States demonized them, popped them all out, and now the Islamic State is there. So again, the Islamic State didn't get there on its own initiative. It was helped, once again, by Western policies.
Let's try to sneak in just a few calls before the broadcast is over. Maria in Kansas City, Missouri, you're on with Raymond Imbrium.
Hi, gentlemen. My question kind of builds off something that Mr. Ibrahim just said about how certain Western nations are empowering the Muslims. When I look back at history, it seems like there are waves of Muslim aggression. Is it accurate to say that, or does it depend more on Western pushback?
If I understand the question, are you essentially saying our Muslims are being aggressive because they have grievances against Western perceived pushbacks?
I guess my question is, would you say that if you looked at history, is it more accurate to say that they are constantly pushing, that there is a evidence of Muslim aggression constantly wherever they are, or does it come in waves depending on how strong Western civilization is?
Well, Muslim aggression historically has always existed whenever it could. So the main thing with Islam is you preach peace when you're weak and you go on the offensive when you're strong. And so anytime there was a Muslim body or a polity or a caliphate, sultanate or whatever, and next to it was an infidel power, if the Muslims were at that point in time able to invade and successfully conquer, they always did. And the only times they didn't is when they just knew that they would lose or they couldn't. And that actually explains why when you hear about Spain and the Golden Age and all that, the Golden Age was actually a product of the fact that there were a lot of Christians in Spain and there was something of a balance of power. And so the Muslims didn't push too hard, because if they did, they would constantly have pure chaos and rebellion. But where Muslims historically can go, they always have gone and conquered.
Let's go back to the phone lines. Take a Canadian caller, Jim, listening in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, CHRB. You're on with Raymond Ibrahim.
Thank you. So the question is, can the Trojan horse of yesterday be likened unto the open borders throughout the world, allowing Muslim Islamic people to move in, some of which must certainly be of the terrorist nature?
Yeah, I mean, the Trojan horse analogy, I think, is apt, except in our situation, again, it's much worse. You know, if you want to look at the Trojan horse and the Iliad and so forth, the people of Ilium didn't understand what was inside the Trojan horse. They just thought it was a gift. And lo and behold, inside of it were their enemies who came out and killed them. But today we have the Islamic State and so many Muslims of leaders and others on record proclaiming their open hatred for everything non-Islamic, proclaiming their open belief that they are commanded to conquer everyone, and when they come in, they will conquer, saying that they will come into Europe and breed the non-Muslims out and subjugate them and so forth. So to me, it's a much worse situation in that we know exactly what gift horse we're getting, and yet our leaders are still adamant about taking it in.
So much we didn't get to. I'm thinking about one of the titles, The Truth Behind Islam's Anti-Freedom Laws, Why Christians Are Singled Out, Academia and the Whitewashing of Islam and the Blaming of the West. the media, which is obscuring the persecution of Christians, the Obama administration enabling, actually facilitating the persecution of Christians, and so much more. Just have a minute or so, Raymond, to once again just give us a perspective on why you chose the title Crucified Again.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up. It was actually, to be honest with you, something of an epiphany. Because I lead a sedentary lifestyle, because all I do is research and write, I often go bike riding, and oftentimes, you know, I chew things over. And one time I was just bike riding and thinking about this book. I had just begun it, and that phrase just hit me very much. And then it was compounded later because I was reading the Bible a couple of days later, I read the verse that talks about Christ being crucified again. And I just felt that, you know, that had to be the title.
And again, the book Crucified Again, Exposing Islam's New War on Christians. Raymond, so great to have you on the broadcast. Look forward to talking to you again.
Absolutely, Hank. Very happy to.
Wonderful book, and it is available. You got to get a copy and read it. The Christian church, quite frankly, is in a diabetic coma. We have overindulged on fast food Christianity. We're paying the price. We have to wake up, because the only real solution, and I'm absolutely convinced in this, I've read many, many books on Islam, all proffering a solution to the incredible clash of civilizations that we're facing. And when I get done reading the solutions, I always feel empty. And I've always thought the only real answer is Christians to wake up, to be salt and light, to be not simply microcosms of the culture, but real change agents in the culture. This book is one of those books that will wake you up. Crucified Again, Exposing Islam's New War on Christians. Available for those who support the ministry. Check it out on the web at equip.org. Write me at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271, or just talk to one of our resource consultants. They are standing by, 888-7000 and the letters CRI. We're out of time for this edition of the broadcast. I'll be right back here answering questions on whatever topic live. The number to dial, 888-ASK-HANK. Look forward to talking to you then.
We appreciate you tuning in to the Bible Answer Man broadcast. If you've been blessed by the broadcast and want more information to help you grow in the grace and knowledge of God, go to our website at equip.org. That's equip.org. To contact a resource consultant, call 888-7000-CRI. Again, that's 888-7000-274. Or you can write to us at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is supported solely by listeners like you. We're on the air because life and truth matter. Christians in the Islamic world are vastly outnumbered and politically subjugated under the Islamic way. In Crucified Again, Exposing Islam's New War on Christians, Raymond Ibrahim poignantly states one urgent reason why the West in its entirety, Christians and non-Christians, liberals and conservatives, deists and atheists, should take note of and respond to Muslim persecution of Christians. It is a reflection of what Islam has in store for them. Ibrahim explains that if the mainstream media were to report honestly on the persecution of Christians under Islam, the obvious implications that Islam is dangerously hostile to all non-Muslims would be inescapable. Read Crucified Again, Exposing Islam's New War on Christians. To receive your copy as our thanks, call 888-7000-CRI or go online at equip.org. Are you the product of millions of years of unguided, purposeless natural processes? Or are you created in the image of a loving God? Faced with the overwhelming scorn of evolutionary proselytizers, it can be hard to articulate the truth about God's creative work. And even among faithful Christians, many misconceptions linger. The Creation Answer Book by Hank Hanegraaff puts answers to the most hotly debated origins questions right at your fingertips, giving you clarity and understanding. Learn to articulate the truth about our origins clearly and compassionately when you request your copy of the Creation Answer Book or listen to Hank's insightful answers with the unabridged audiobook version on CD. Receive your copy of the Creation Answer Book or the audiobook on CD from the Christian Research Institute when you call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org.